This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You know those scenarios in which a butterfly flaps its wings or somehow a breeze blows in a certain direction, some inconsequential act, and it changes the course of human history? In one of those scenarios, somehow, Hillary Clinton will take the oath of office on Friday, just not in this universe. We know that although Hillary Clinton won a popular majority by almost 3 million votes, she lost in the Electoral College, and there are all kinds of reasons for that which we don't have to go into. One that we can't deny is that Clinton's gender was an issue. It was an issue. Clearly, some people are not willing, whether they admit it or not, to have a woman lead the country. The New Yorker's Amy Davidson has spent a lot of time this year thinking about the barriers that women face in politics and who the first female chief executive just might be whenever she arrives. Amy spoke with Debbie Walsh, the director of the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University, which tries to get more women into office.
Say a woman comes to you who's sort of on the fence. Give me the 30-second pitch you would give her why she should run for office.
The challenges that this country are facing right now are enormous, and we cannot afford to keep half of the talent and the creativity on the sidelines. And we can't just wait every 4 years for a presidential race to be engaged in the political process. Our democracy demands that we are engaged in this process all the time. And there's a wonderful saying that if you're not at the table, you are probably on the menu. And we need to make sure that women are at the table when policy decisions are being made that affect their lives. Mm-hmm. I think that politics is still very much gendered space. One of the challenges that we have when we think about women running for the presidency is that, by and large, this year being an exception, clearly. But by and large, we elect our presidents either from the United States Senate or from the governors across the country. And right now, there are only 21 women serving in the United States Senate.
Or you could think about it, there are 21 women serving in the United States Senate, again, all of whom were, you know, at least where Obama was in terms
right.
of seniority and experience. That's 21. I mean, it's not 50, but it's 21 people who – why isn't each and every one of them asking, why don't I run for president?
Well, we don't know that they're not thinking that.
Right.
I mean, I think there are
– Why aren't we asking them?
Yeah,
why?
I think that's probably more the issue. I think there are a few women now who clearly are being talked about. Obviously, Elizabeth Warren is somebody who people are talking about as a potential presidential candidate. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York. There's even been conversations and articles written about Kamala Harris, who just was sworn into her first term from California, about the potential for her as a presidential candidate. But I think that we have to be realistic that the pool is still relatively small. On the gubernatorial side, we only have 5 women governors. And then there are all kinds of considerations, what state they come from, their ability to raise money, whether they want it or not.
But, yeah, but a lot of men throw those doubts aside. I just wonder if we should be thinking about the pool as being, you know, seeing it as a half-full pipeline rather than a half-empty pipeline.
I'm often the half-empty person on this subject, because I think what's been so frustrating is to watch the numbers below the presidential level move as slowly as they have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking about this election cycle where there was a woman running at the top of the ticket for the very first time in history as a nominee. And we came out of this election with exactly the same number of women in Congress. We went from 24.5% women in state legislatures to 24.8%.
Now, you said that, you know, we needed to be realistic, but isn't part of the challenge here getting women to be a little unrealistic, that, or maybe the handicap that women have is that they're too realistic compared to men? That you need to be a little
well, I think that
out there.
I think
to...
it would be very hard for a woman who had the level of experience of a Donald Trump to get elected president of the United States. I think about a Carly Fiorina, who mm-hmm. ran for president on the Republican side. And I think in many ways, you'd have to say, did the strongest debate performance of most of the candidates up there, certainly in many ways stronger than Donald Trump. And he took her on and did a lot of the same kind of playing his gender card with her in the way he had with Jeb Bush and he did with Marco Rubio, and he tried it with her. And I think she really took him on in the debate and silenced him in a way that I think there almost nobody else was able to do. But yet it didn't work for her, being that consummate outsider. I think that it's a real double bind. You know, you need to be the outsider a bit, right? But you still have to prove that you're qualified.
Debbie, let me ask you this. You know, we've talked about this as the tallest, the hardest glass ceiling, but it's a ceiling that's been broken by a lot of other countries around the world, including some that we don't think of being, you know, ahead of us on women's rights, like, you know, not just places like Germany and Great Britain, India, Pakistan.
Right.
Take Merkel. You know, she was East German. So until sort of early middle age, she was an obscure scientist in East Germany. And do we need to have more of that just crazed imagination here about how you can change your life by running for office or getting into politics? Or
I think it's one thing if you have the imagination to run, and the structure that we have set up in this country, I think, makes it very difficult for that complete outsider, unless perhaps that outsider has billions of dollars at their disposal to put into a campaign. So I think that does make it hard for that real outsider to kind of come in and run for the presidency.
So are you saying Sheryl Sandberg should be thinking about running for president?
I've been very interested in some of the women who are, and sadly there are not enough of them, right, who are CEOs
right.
of major Fortune 500 companies. But to see some of these women who can take kind of that express ramp into politics. You know, some of the women who, I don't know if it's to go directly to the presidency, but to go directly to the Senate, to go directly to the House, to not necessarily think that you have to run for, you know, work your way up. And I think that's actually a myth and I think it's something that women are told more often, you know, work your way up. And
right.
so they feel they have to start at the school board level and then maybe run for local municipal office and then the state legislature. Now, if you want to be in the school board, great, run for school board. But I sometimes worry that what happens is women will run for school board and municipal office. And frankly, that's some of the toughest work there is to do out
right,
there.
And they just
get burned out and they don't run for anything else. You know, you can't even go to the grocery store because everybody knows you and
right.
they're upset because you're doing something with their kids. So I think we can run the risk of burning women out before they even get started when, in fact, the reality is if the opportunity comes along, if there's an open seat, if you're positioned, if you've been active in the community, you know.
And go big.
Go big, yeah.
Amy Davidson, a writer for The New Yorker, speaking with Debbie Walsh of Rutgers University. She's the director of the Center for American Women in Politics.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.